Travel Itch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with co-host Anita Stokes-Thomas. Every week at this time, we bring you inside the world of travel, from hotels and tours to cruise ships, planes, trains, and things you can eat or read on your trip. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com, or check out the show later on Facebook, blogtalkradio.com, or my website, danschlossberg.net. Tonight, in the 337th episode of Travel Itch Radio, we're talking about the pending theater release of Heading Home, The Tale of Team Israel, with director Jeremy Neuberger. Welcome, Jeremy, to Travel Itch Radio.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. Jeremy, I love travel, baseball, and Cinderella stories, and Heading Home, which I've seen, is all three. With the film about to hit theaters nationwide, especially New York and L.A., would you explain what makes this such a heartwarming story?
I think it's the people in it. A very good film usually has very good characters, and we got lucky because this film is filled with some of the nicest Jewish boys you'll ever meet, and that is the guys in Team Israel.
Well, it's definitely an underdog. And Team Israel exceeds all the expectations in the last World Baseball Classic. So how did that happen?
You know, all of the press kind of had a field day with this series because they were, as you said, pretty big underdogs. And papers like the New York Times, when they started to win in the tournament, were calling it the miracle of miracles. But if you were to talk to the players, they were less surprised than the world was. And the reason for that is that this team was assembled and drafted in time for the qualifier in Brooklyn. And the guys that were assembled were journeymen, guys who had been in the majors, had dropped down to the minors, had played top of their game in indie ball. So they weren't nobodies. And the ranking of Israel was based on their regular season play with a team made up of Israeli-born players. So I think when they entered the tournament, it was like a 200-to-1 odds that they would do well. And when they started beating every team, it was shocking the world. But these guys were saying, hey, I was on the Mets, you know. I know how to play baseball.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So talk about some of the exciting games, because I know Team Israel beat some pretty stiff competition.
You know, the first game was pretty remarkable. It was against South Korea, and it was in South Korea, in Seoul, with a crowd filled with Korean fans. So for me, that might be my favorite of the games, just because it was a really hard-fought game against South Korea, which has a very good team. You know, baseball in countries like Korea and Japan, it's pretty popular, and they have some really strong players who end up, some of them, farmed out to, you know, the Major League Baseball teams. So they put up a pretty good fight, and Israel, I think, by beating them and silencing that stadium, for me as the filmmaker who was there, that was maybe one of the most remarkable moments of the whole series. That they continued to win is, of course, the film, but that particular game stands out for me.
Wow, so exciting. Now, how was the team assembled? Because it sounds like some really unique players there. Did all of the players have to be Jewish or have some type of connection to Israel? And are most of them from the U.S.?
Yeah, so the way that it works in the World Baseball Classic is they have what's called a heritage rule that says in order to play for a country, you have to be eligible to be a citizen of that country. So the eligibility of Israel as a nation is you have to have a Jewish grandparent or have married a Jewish person in order to qualify to be a citizen. So the team was made up of, I would say, all but two American Jews. There were two natural-born Israelis on the team. Both of them happened to live in America but were born in Israel. And the rest were all American Jews. Now, what level of Judaism did they practice? That's like another story. We weren't playing with the most observant or religious Jews. We were playing with guys that have devoted most of their life to playing baseball, not practicing the faith of Judaism. So the process of finding them was kind of funny. And in the film, we kind of follow the general manager, Peter Kurz, who goes around looking for the Jews in baseball to draft the perfect team for Israel. And that involves, finding tombstone pictures of someone's grandparents' tombstone with Hebrew letters on it, or getting a marriage license sent, that proves that they had a Jewish grandparent. And that journey is really interesting and fun to watch.
Well, there are quite a few Jewish players active in the major leagues, but those were unavailable to you. Is that correct?
Yeah, you know why the big stars that there's quite a few Jewish stars right now. Matter of fact, in the last World Series, the games leading up, there was at least one Jewish player on each of the four teams that led into the World Series. So why didn't those guys like Jock Peterson of the Dodgers or Ian Kinsler, who I think was on the Sox last year, or Bregman, why weren't those guys on the team? And the answer is that the World Baseball Classic takes place during spring training. And that is a time when serious athletes are really focused on preparing for the season, and you don't want to risk getting injured in an international baseball tournament and ruining your season where, you're getting paid for the season. So that's, I think, why they didn't attract usually don't attract many of the biggest names, although some of the teams had people, like the Netherlands, for example, had New York Yankees' Didi Gregorius, who was actually injured in the World Baseball Classic, which kind of proved the point I was just making. So that's why I think they didn't have the big star names, but they made do with who they had, and then who they had really were impressive.
Do the players have to be amateurs, or can they be professionals, and how is Team Israel paid?
They were paid, and they were paid gradually, after each group that they would win, they would get more money. And they had to be professional athletes. I mean, in the minor leagues, and independent ball, and Major League Baseball, that's who they pulled from. I think the most recognizable names on the team were Ike Davis, who was a former New York Met, Jason Marquis, who I think was on so many different teams of the Reds and the Cubs, and then guys maybe that bumped into the majors briefly, like Ty Kelly, who was on the Mets. Or Ryan LaVarnway, who was on the Red Sox at a certain point. There were a lot of guys who had kind of tasted the majors briefly and then were bumped down to AAA or AA. Or Jason Marquis, who I mentioned before, actually came out of retirement to be in the World Baseball Classic.
Okay. Listeners, we're talking with Heading Home director Jeremy Neuberger. Jeremy, where did you find your manager and coaches?
So the World Baseball Classic Team Israel is put together by the Israel Association of Baseball, which is a group in Israel under the umbrella of the JNF. And Peter Kurz, who is the general manager of the team, along with Margo Sugarman, who is the sort of vice general manager, they assembled the team. They also run baseball teams all year round from Israel, mostly Israeli-born players, but that is who was responsible for finding Jerry Weinstein, the manager, and assembling the team with, the help of some scouts that they have that work in the Major League Baseball here.
Well, after watching the movie, I believe the team bonded because of the common denominator, similar religious background and love of baseball. Is that fair to say?
It's very fair to say that there was bonding amongst the Team Israel just based on their backgrounds and faith, even though some of the guys really weren't born, very faithful. They were born, by name Jewish, but not practicing. But I think that what was really helpful was the IAB organized a trip to Israel that 10 of the players took, but right before the Korean portion of the tournament. And that trip was a real bonding exercise. And most famously, I think, the catcher on the team, Ryan LaVarnway, and pitcher Josh Zide really built up a friendship while traveling Israel that extended in, you know, fantastic ways for them on the field once they got to Korea. So I'm going to say that that Israel trip was a helpful bonding experience for these guys. But, yeah, you know, Cody Decker, who is one of the sluggers on the team, told me that there were very few other teams competing in the World Baseball Classic who could say that they cried on each other's shoulders at a Holocaust museum. That's a really special bond.
That's for sure. There are about 9 or 10 of these guys who got dual citizenship with Israel so they can be in the Olympics. How did that happen?
So, you know, the success of Israel in the World Baseball Classic in 2017, it was an international story. I got very lucky to be a fly on the wall making this film when it happened. But you could see that there was attention coming from all over the world. And at the end of the World Baseball Classic, even though Israel is not the team that comes in first place, I won't spoil who that is, the interest in Israel and support for Israel baseball started to grow. So Peter, the general manager, decided that maybe now is the time for Israel to compete in the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo with a baseball team, since baseball is returning to the Olympics. The difference between the Olympics and the World Baseball Classic is you have to be a citizen of the country to compete in the Olympics. So that raised an interesting challenge for Peter. He couldn't just draft American players who are Jewish. Now he had to find American players who are Jewish who were willing to become citizens of Israel. Now, you'd think that would have been harder to do, but he was actually able to get a group of, I think, about 15 to 20 players. I'd say there was originally there was about 5 from the World Baseball Classic team, but I think that's extended to about 8 now who are returning. And the same weekend that my film opens, September 6th, they will be in Germany trying to get into the top 5 bracket in order to get to Italy at the end of the month to qualify for the Olympics. So we're still not qualified yet, but Israel so far is running 8-0. So they're doing really well once again.
That's fabulous. About 10 years ago, Jeremy, there was a 6-team Israel baseball league that featured Jewish American managers in Ron Bloomberg, Art Shamsky, and Ken Holtzman. Is there any connection between that league, which only lasted a year, and Team Israel?
You know, only in the sort of spiritual connection. I think that that league, which was short-lived in Israel, Peter, who I mentioned earlier, who's the GM, you know, he was part of that, and he has continued with the same enthusiasm since then in building as best of a baseball program as he could build there. Now, it's funny you mentioned Bloomberg. You know, Ron Bloomberg, I spoke with him just this week. He's going to join us in New York City at the premiere of the film to do Q&As at several of the films. And he was calling me today or yesterday while driving up to, like, some golfing event with Art Shamsky. So they were together when he called. So I thought that was pretty wild. I'm a huge fan of these guys. And I happen to be holding a Ken Holtzman baseball card that I found in our garage while we were cleaning up for bulk pickup this week. So it's all sort of coming together spiritually.
Okay,
Nita? That's pretty interesting. Yeah, that's pretty interesting. But let me ask you this, Jeremy. Your team has the most unusual mascot I've ever seen, Mitch on the Bench. So who created it and who wears it?
So the mascot for Team Israel, full credit goes to Cody Decker, who is one of the players on the team. He's just recently retired, and Cody will be at our Los Angeles screenings doing Q&As. But he saw the Bench on the Bench on Shark Tank, and it's sort of documented in our film. But Neil Hoffman, who created the Mensch on the Bench, it was the Jewish answer to the Elf on the Shelf, which is a popular Christmas stuffed animal people kind of move around the house during Christmas. And he felt, like, why don't the Jews have something similar? So he created the Elf on the the Mensch on the Bench, and Cody saw it, took a liking to it, and was using it as a mascot or sort of a prop in the Brooklyn qualifiers. And when they qualified, he contacted Neil, and Neil sent him a 6-foot-tall stuffed one. And I have to tell you, when that thing went to Seoul, Korea, and Tokyo, Japan, it was a bigger star than any of the players. They love mascots over there. So the Mensch was getting, you know, interview requests, and reporters were taking pictures of him, and crowds were going wild over him. But it wasn't a costume. It was like a giant stuffed animal or a giant stuffed rabbi. So nobody wears the Mensch, but the Mensch, he is a crowd pleaser.
Yeah, he's definitely there and present. Now, where does Team Israel train? I know there were only three ballparks with two teams in each when the Israel Baseball League was active. So where do you guys train?
You know, so a lot of the players that are competing in the World Baseball Classic are pulled from major and minor league teams here in the States. So they train mostly with whatever AAA or AA, you know, farm teams that they're connected with. You know, at the time of filming, there was one field in Israel. And since the film and its success and the success of the team, they were able to raise money to build two more fields. But they're still under construction. But they're getting built, but they're not built quite yet. So until Israel has more than, you know, one field, it's a little limiting where people are able to train. So the Israeli teams that the IAB run, they train at the one field that exists and a few different sort of sports centers that are around Israel that have the kind of terrain or grass that they could play on. But for the most part, the American players, they're training here in the States.
Now, we're talking with Heading Home Director Jeremy Neuberger.
And you are listening to Travel Itch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Anita Stokes-Thomas. Find the archive show on blogtalkradio.com or check out Travel Itch Radio on Facebook. We're also on iTunes. Jeremy, I know how those long flights are from New York to Israel. Was that where a lot of the bonding took place among the players?
You know, it's funny you should say that, but the airplane that was that we used to fly to Israel was donated by a very wealthy Jewish casino magnate named Sheldon Edelson. So the plane was just outrageous. It was like flying in, I would say, Trump's living room. And the 10 players that went over with me and my partner Seth, my fellow filmmaker, we were on that plane as it flew from Las Vegas to Chicago to pick up half the team, from Chicago to Israel, which is a long flying time. I'd say there was a lot of bonding on that flight, especially, you know, since it wasn't like a standard plane with rows. It had, you know, a big table to play poker on, you know, it had a living room, it had a fully stocked bar. So I would say, yeah, there was a lot of bonding on that flight there and the flight back.
Sounds pretty fancy. But now, what did they think of the welcome they received in Israel and also the fan reaction at the World Baseball Classic?
So Israel, you know, they interacted with a lot of expatriates who live there, you know, a lot of transplants from New York. So especially Mets fans were very enthusiastic to see Ike Davis, who was, a really sensational Met. And when they were doing clinics and practicing in the one field that they went to, there was tons of, you know, expat kids there to cheer them on and to sign autographs. And I think every visit they did in Israel, from the Kotel to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Museum, to, you know, whatever restaurants they ate at, they were treated so warmly, just as Israelis treat all visitors who come to Israel. And then Korea and Japan, where they went, there was there's this love of baseball in these countries that it sort of harkens back to maybe 50 years ago when baseball was even much more popular here in America, or maybe what you would expect to see in Cuba or Dominican Republic, countries that really, really love baseball. It's everything. So when the team arrived in Seoul, they were treated like visiting warriors, like opponents of, you know, their national team, but respected because they're participating in this sport that everyone loves so much.
That sounds really interesting. Now, the WBC occurs every 4 years, which means there will be another one in 2021.
Correct.
Is that right?
So, mm-hmm. Yeah, in 2021, there will be another World Baseball Classic. And wouldn't you know it, as a result of how well Israel did, they are already automatically qualified for the 2021 World Baseball Classic. So we'll see how they do in 2020 if they make it into the Olympics. But we may be looking at two solid years of Israel baseball coming up.
Oh, that sounds good. So then you might participate in both then. That sounds great.
Well, at the moment, you know, I mentioned to you earlier that for the Olympics, they need to be citizens. And what the IAB did is they paid for about 10 to 15 athletes to come over and get dual citizenship. And we started filming some of the citizenship process for what might become, heading home to, the return of the men.
That's great. Well, in 2021, some of the players from 2017, actually all of them, are going to be 4 years older. Do you think they'll be able to maintain the same level of performance?
You know, I've asked that to a few of them because as we've traveled the country with the film, various members of Team Israel have come to the different film festivals and theatrical runs to sign autographs and answer questions at the Q&As. So I've asked them, you know, some of the guys have retired. So their answer is more in the no column. You know, I'm not doing that anymore. But I would never say never. I mean, Jason Marquis came out of retirement for the WBC. You know, why wouldn't a great pitcher like Josh Zide, who's currently in the front office at the Cubs, come out of retirement? I mean, that guy was really one of the studs of this team. He pitched beautifully and I think could be attributed to some of the great victories they had in the series. So it depends on who you ask, you know. These guys are all in great shape. I mean, it's almost embarrassing to travel with them. I know you guys have a travel program. Well, I love to travel, but I don't ever work out when I'm traveling. When I'm traveling, I'm focused on eating and, you know, schmoozing. These guys, they go to some place, and the first thing they want to do is find a gym where they can work out.
Yeah, I'm with you with the eating.
Well, having worked with Ron Bloomberg as his co-author on his book, Designated Hebrew, I know he still works out. He's in his 70s. He works out 3 hours a day.
I could tell from talking to him, he's very energetic, that he is always on the move. And that, you know, that's the life of an athlete. From the beginning, you know, they always have that mentality. And what a class act he is, too.
Okay. We're talking with Heading Home director Jeremy Neuberger. Anita?
Yeah, I understand there are two versions of Heading Home, Jeremy. One of them without the curse words, and I know some of the kids watching the movie might be offended if they catch the wrong version. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I don't think anyone's been offended. You know, I've shown the film as it was edited with, you know, locker room talk and all, and no one in my experience from old to young has ever complained. It's sort of kind of the language you hear on the field or in the locker room. And it's not like used gratuitously in the film. As a matter of fact, some of the more saltier language comes when players are describing some of the anti-Semitic experiences they've had being Jewish. And for me, the words they choose to articulate the sort of hatred that they felt or the pain they felt of anti-Semitism, those are the right words to hear at those moments. So as a documentary filmmaker, I tend to lean towards, you should listen to the version without the beeps. Now, there are occasions where we've created a beep version in case it's for really young audiences, but I don't think it's such a big deal. The film, if you see it, Anita, it is the most wholesome, family-friendly, kind of good message film you'll ever see.
Well, it sounds like it's truly
authentic.
Yeah, you second
that.
But
also, I did see it with some school groups of rather young Orthodox kids, and they were bothered by it.
Yeah. So in the Orthodox community, I think we're going to hear different feedback probably than we hear from more secular audiences. I know a friend of mine who is Orthodox Jewish objected to something I would never imagine anyone object to. There's like a scene at a restaurant where a belly dancer is dancing, and she said that she would take that out. But, you know, the film is what the film is, and I think that the widest possible, you know, audience is going to love it, and I think there's always going to be a few things that bother a few people, and that's sort of the way movies are and life is.
Well,
I was just saying I agree. You can't please everybody, so you got to get it out there and let it do its thing.
You can't please everybody, but this film comes close.
Next week is premiere week in New York and L.A. for Heading Home, A Tale of Team Israel. How long is the movie, and how can listeners get tickets?
So the movie is about 87 minutes, and the premiere weekend is happening in theaters in New York and New Jersey and Long Island and Westchester and then all around Los Angeles. And if you're interested in seeing it, what I suggest is you go to Facebook and you type in the title of the film, Heading Home, The Tale of Team Israel, where we post all of the screening information, links to the theaters where you could buy tickets, and also a guide where you could see who's doing Q&As and what special guests are showing up at which theaters.
Now, our listeners always like to know a little bit more about our guests. So can you please share a little bit about yourself, like where you were born and raised in school, and how you got into the film industry and how you got involved with Heading Home, the tale of Team Israel?
Absolutely, Anita. I grew up in a house in Dix Hill, Long Island, New York. My father, Joel, and my mother, Shirley, were middle-class conservative Jews. We had three sets of dishes. One for dairy, one for meat, and one for take-in Chinese food. And I had a very, very positive life in Dix Hills. My parents were really loving to each other and to my brother, sister, and I. And I spent my summers in Jewish sleepaway camp at Camp Young Judea, Sprout Lake, and Tel Yehuda. Those are two camps that I went to. And that's where I met my partner, Dan Miller, who is my co-director on all the films I do. And also Jonathan Mayo, who is the reporter for Major League Baseball, was instrumental in the creation of this film. He's actually one of the producers, too. We met at Jewish sleepaway camp in the 80s, and lo and behold, 30 years later, we were able to collaborate together. I went to SUNY Albany. I studied film and English. I learned from the greats like Shakespeare and Chaucer on how to tell a story. And after I got out, I worked my way up through NBC Television News, until I was able to join my friend Dan and my friend Seth at Ironbound Films, where we've made seven films together since 2004.
Wow, you've done a lot.
It's a great movie. Really, really like it. Okay, Anita,
that's
go ahead.
Awesome,
one more.
Yeah, our special guest tonight has been Jeremy Neuberger, director of Heading Home, The Tale of Team Israel. So, Jeremy, let me just say thank you from Dan and I both for joining Travel Itch Radio tonight. It was a pleasure having you on.
Thank you, Anita, and thank you, Dan, for the kind words about the film. And it's a great pleasure to be on Travel Itch Radio. I love traveling, not so much itching, but I love traveling. So it's good to hear you guys on here.
Well, it's a great movie, and I look forward to the sequel and wish much success to Team Israel as it moves on. So
terrific.
Listeners, when you're thinking about gifts for late summer birthdays or beach reading, how about my book, The New Baseball Bible, 424-page illustrated unorthodox history of baseball. Not only the most unusual baseball book ever published, but 424 pages for less than a $1, such a deal. Order on Amazon.com today as a gift for your favorite baseball fan or even yourself. And that is it for this edition of Travel Itch Radio. Next week, we'll talk with Rachel Linden, travel writer, humanitarian aid worker, and author of The Enlightenment of Bees. Same time, same station, same writer, and same announcers. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with Anita Stokes-Thomas, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night.
Hello?